You're listening to The Weekly Show on Discourse.
Did I have a good weekend? So is it or good week?
Good week.
Are you recording, by the way?
Yeah, you know what? It's really nice hanging out with the kid.
Yeah. I think that broadly remains true.
Well, my kid and your kids might not be the same. My temperament and your temperament, definitely not the same.
Certainly true.
So who knows? We might have very different experiences.
Generally, I think all kids are pretty frustrating at times.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. So today was his second round of vaccinations.
Oh, good fun.
And he dealt with it. I don't know if it was about having experience with having done it once, or if we were better at trying to soothe him afterwards, but he seemed to do a lot better. But of course, now he's got the temperature thing.
Oh, and, that again, yeah.
I remain fucked off with how unsophisticated vaccination is, and yet there is no alternative yet.
Sure there is. It's homeopathy.
Yeah. It's what is it? Nothing's better?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
You seem to get the vibrational energy of something.
Yeah. So like Reiki or something?
Yeah, probably.
Should we just put crystals all around them?
It's a good idea.
I'm sure that will work. Maybe we could... I assume that we started a little minute ago.
Well, maybe. I haven't shut my door yet. I'm not sure if the child's asleep, but, you know, it's kind of like that.
I'm Morgan Avery. He's Dylan Reeve.
Yep.
He's a suburban father of three, and I'm a... What's the difference? Am I urban or am I suburban?
You're a borderline.
Where does suburbia start?
I wouldn't think you're quite suburban, but you're not exactly urban either. There's probably some middle ground. If we browse around on Wikipedia long enough, we'll find a proper definition for where you are.
I don't actually know what the distinction is.
No, neither do I. Again.
Does it just have to have no commercial space or something
at all?
Excuse
me, I'm just going to go and see the three-year-old that's yelling at me.
Go and be dad.
Yeah, be back in a minute.
Tell him that he is the son. I expect at the moment I'm going to start playing that do-do-do-do-do-do-do music.
God, I hope you just edited this interruption out of the podcast rather than carrying on.
Probably.
He got mummed.
Well, it's useful to have a mum around.
The issue is when he's in bed and he hears either of us talking, and it doesn't seem like we're talking to each other, like if we're on the phone or if we're talking, God forbid, to another person in the house, he shouts because he wants to know who it is.
Who gives a fuck what he wants? He's the kid.
Yes, but he shouts.
He can shout all he likes. He's just a kid.
Okay. Well, anyway, hopefully he won't shout anymore. We'll see.
Urban father of... I still don't know what the distinction is. I tried to look up suburban, and it comes up with suburb on Wikipedia, and it says, a suburb is a residential area or a mixed-use area, either existing or as part of a city or suburban area. That's not actually useful.
No, it's not especially useful.
I probably should have searched for the difference between urban and suburban. How about that?
Welcome to Discourse Wikipedias.
Ask says, urban area, does that say?
Do you remember when Ask Jeeves was the search engine you used?
I loved Ask Jeeves so much. And it was just, by comparison with today, it was terrible.
How
like
did it go?
Now the awesome bar or whatever it's called, that thing is amazing.
But did it go like, was it, I'm trying to remember what our search engine preferences were. Was it like, did it go like Lycos? This is like in time. I think Lycos first was the one that was the popular search engine. And then maybe Ask Jeeves and then AltaVista and then Google. Is that, have I got them in the right order?
Where was Yahoo in your list?
Was Yahoo ever really particularly good search engine? It was mostly directory at first.
That's true, and they're closing that.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow? Something like that?
Well, who...
pretty soon.
There are people who would never even have the slightest con. Like, how many people on the internet now would even know that there were such a thing as an internet directory?
Why would you have a thing where you have to submit your site manually and then you suggest a category for it? Why would you have that? That seems...
But do you remember when everyone was doing, there was that period of time where it was a portal and everyone was doing it, all the ISPs did it. You had this thing, you had a portal and you had to have, your portal had to have news information. So you'd pair up with some sort of news aggregator and then you had to have, you had to have local information, weather and shit like that. Maybe some TV listings and you had to have like some categorized website stuff. It was amazing. That was how we all thought the internet was going to, I think I thought portals were a load of bullshit the whole time.
I built one of those for iHug, and now did it have NZ Herald RSS?
No,
it didn't, because they wouldn't provide one. It was
NZ City.
Yeah, it was NZ City. But there was a feed from the Met service. That was nice. I think it was an FTP thing.
That wasn't even RSS though, was it? I don't think RSS existed then. I think it was some even less advanced sort of...
Honestly, I don't remember what format it was.
CGI scripts or
something. I think NZ City was RSS.
Was that a thing?
Yeah, it was 1999. It was brand new, but it was a thing. '99.
All right.
I remember begging.
Was it '99? I thought it was earlier than that. Maybe. I guess it must have been '99.
I remember begging NZ Herald people to provide bloody RSS feeds, and I think they didn't even understand what I was saying.
No, about that time, I knew someone who worked in the NZ Herald Online, and they were slightly more advanced than a lot of the people who worked around them.
Yeah. It was quite fun building one of those things, but they were stupid.
Like the internet was so ridiculous when we were sort of riding high.
Yeah.
It was so
all
dumb.
Perl. All that stuff was Perl.
It was, and I remember, people shit on PHP now, but Jesus, it was a breath of fresh air compared to Perl CGI.
Perl stuff. Well, the way that I used Perl was that I used it to, I guess now you'd call it like pre-cache, and I'd output it to HTML, and so I didn't run Perl for everyone that had, and that actually made it super fast.
But it was like everything, all the stuff, like, because the thing when I started using PHP, which was in 1998, I think, the big thing was that there was a whole lot of stuff you didn't have to worry about doing anymore that you had to do in Perl, because Perl was, was a general scripting language, and to do web stuff, you had to do, you had to manually do a whole lot of stuff, even like down to HTTP headers and stuff you had to output.
Yeah.
And all that was taken away with PHP because it was designed for one thing.
Yeah.
And it did it so well.
I remember going to a Cold Fusion launch / sales pitch / information thing in like 1997.
Can you believe there are still people out there who program in Cold Fusion?
Who would do that?
I can't imagine.
Did you know that votes.discourse was written in Cold Fusion?
I did not, because I never saw it. It just redirected straight to the YouTube page.
Yeah, that's because the server melted. It wasn't because of Cold Fusion.
No, it wasn't.
It was because of the host dissolved.
Yeah, and something else. Hey,
something
you know what?
Else? What else?
No, I don't know. Just some other things that happened there. You know what? It must have been since we last spoke on the podcast. I don't think it existed when we last talked.
Yeah.
Was Hello? The Shell Shock thing.
Oh, yeah. Shell Shock. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I found out about that, I guess, on the same time as everyone else, Friday, I guess. Maybe Thursday, late Thursday or Friday. That was a pretty big deal. And I guess it will continue to be a big deal, especially once, more sophisticated attacks and stuff are developed. I've had a bunch of my servers have been probed for shell
shock. Yeah, I haven't actually. That's an interesting thing. I should probably look at some weblogs because I haven't for a while.
It's really easy to find them. It's from what I can tell, you can just grep for a very simple string. Open then close paren space and then brace, and that's it.
Yep.
And that'll almost certainly show you a bunch. Like, it's really funny. Like, it was so easy to test for it that some of the earlier people who were on it decided just to scan like the internet.
Yeah. Well, there was
instead of scanned every IP address.
Someone tweeted a worm. Like they made a conceptual worm,
right?
And the entire thing fitted in a tweet,
right?
Because it would infect a thing. It would run a command that would download a script, so it had it locally, and then it would, I think, it would run that script, and then it would just sit there while true, sending wget requests with the same exploit string to random 0.255, random 0.255, just random IP address. It was the most elegantly small worm I can imagine.
Yeah.
I don't know how well it worked. From what I could see, none of my web posts seemed to be vulnerable. But I didn't test them extensively.
There was that simple little one-liner, which it seems to do a decent kind of early cut at saying if you were vulnerable to like the stupidest form of the bug.
Well, I think from the command line perspective, I may have been. I just did some remote. I did the remote user agent test to see if that did anything. I don't think any of my servers have anything.
Was that using one of the little websites that sprung up offering?
Yeah,
the test?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never trust those things, so I could never bring myself to do it.
Just a JavaScript thing, so I could see what it was doing, but none of them seemed to. I don't think anything on my servers is embedding user agent stuff in environment variables.
Was Debian ever vulnerable? Because Debian uses dash, not bash. But when I ran the command line thing on one of my servers, it was vulnerable, on another, it wasn't. But I'm not sure if it actually means anything.
I don't know either. But my weird nerdy Linux friends from back in the day who insisted that TCSH was better than bash. Dash are probably patting themselves on the back now, or more likely they eventually went along with everyone else and used Bash.
I'm pretty sure I used to have an opinion on that.
Yeah, you probably used to have an opinion on VI and Emacs as well.
Listen, Nano, I mean, why make things more difficult for yourself? I use VI if I absolutely have to not have a single character out of place, but Nano is just fine.
I use VI if I want to accidentally do things that confuse the hell out of me and destroy the file I'm editing. Because, you know, once you don't use these things very often, it's very easy to get confused.
Yeah. WQ exclamation mark. That's how you undo.
Yep. Exactly. So what was the other thing? Oh, LO.
Yeah, LO. LO.ELLO.co.
So no one sent me an invite.
Oh, do you want one? I'll send you one now.
I give relatively few shits.
Do you want one?
Oh, sure. Send me one. But everything I've seen, I just look at it, I'm like, this is unimpressive to me.
It's total garbage. It's the most ridiculously hyped mother.
And I'm like, wait, so a bicycle designer made this? Is that what I'm led to believe? And then there's the critique or the I don't know, poo-pooing, you could probably more accurately call it, from someone. I don't remember who. Don't remember what their credibility or what their history is, but on the grounds that it's taken VC money, so it's clearly not going to live up to its objective of being non-commercial, which makes a shitload of sense.
I just invited your Gmail.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's such a bloody strange site. It definitely was designed by artists, and one of Ben's very few posts on LO is something like, if nothing else, LO proves once and for all that artists aren't designers. He said something like that.
Yeah.
And that got a massive 55 views, which, I mean, is probably more than anything I've posted on there, but... he has 23 followers, old Hollywood Ben, on LO.
Wow, he's probably got the most followers of anyone on that website.
No, because if you go to the Discover page, just by some weird coincidence, if you could figure out how to get to the Discover page.
I can't use LastPass to generate a password because I probably can if I hide the advanced option, because it scrolls off the bottom of the screen and I can't push the button.
Right.
Now it's done.
It's such a strange site. Like, the reason people spoke about it to begin with, I think, was just because this invite thing, that makes people interested.
Yeah, it's a good thing, isn't it?
The first I ever heard of it was someone on Twitter saying, can anyone send me an LO invite? That was the first I ever heard of it. And I think there's actually something quite viral about that, you know? Hey,
what about me, guys? It kind of reminds me of the web design that I was into in, like, 1997, where everything was...
You could not make a design this good in 1997.
No, but black and gray and white and fixed with type.
Oh, unless you used Flash. If you used Flash, you could make something that looked probably pretty similar to this, but this would have been difficult in 1997. But it's a piece of piss now, and it's garbage. The idea, this thing where they reckon they're ideologically pure because they don't have advertising, get fucked.
Well, they don't have advertising, and they're not going to have advertising, but that's...
They're not going to sell user information. And so how are they going to make money? Well, I guess by having people pay something for having an account. And that's fair enough, because that's how, you know, I interact with Feedly. But Feedly don't try and lord it over people with the lack of advertising. Actually, for all I know, Feedly does have advertising. I just don't see it because, you know, I pay. I actually like being a customer sometimes. But the thing that the really key distinction is that the experience of using Feedly is really good, and the experience of using LO is garbage, like really garbage.
It's not very intuitive. This is I'm just telling you as I go through it now, so you can experience this with me. It's not very intuitive. It's a bit odd.
One thing I quite like is if you scroll up to the top of my page, or most people's pages, there's a...
That's quite cool, eh? Yeah, I like it. It's just a little thing that you can actually scroll further up and reveal more of it. That's quite cool.
Yeah. So there's a big kind of banner/background image, which by default is actually is almost entirely concealed. But if you scroll up quickly, you get all of it. And that is, you know, can be quite a pleasant effect. So this thing was compared to Twitter, it was compared to Facebook, but really it's like a really kind of a shitty third-rate version of Tumblr, and it's not anything like Twitter or Facebook.
So the criticism made against it was they took, I don't know, $500,000 in VC funding or something like that.
Doesn't sound like that much these days, does it?
No, it's not. It's relatively small. But yeah. The point was then made that, you know, VCs expect a significant return on the investment, and the way they usually like to see that return is by the sale of the company.
Yeah.
That's how they hope to make money, is not that you generate a nice simple, small, slow profit model.
No one's buying this piece of shit.
But that you sell your company for $1 billion.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. No one would buy this thing.
Well, we'll see, won't we? Maybe they will.
No, they won't. Like maybe some weird, like an Estonian company will end up acquiring them and like stripping them for whatever single technology is actually interesting. Or like there's one engineer that they want to hire, and acquiring the company is the cheapest way to get that person. No one serious is buying this piece of shit because it's garbage.
The LO user account automatically is tagged as noise.
Yep.
That's helpful.
Yep.
But the important question is MySpace Tom on here?
Oh, really good question. I'm not sure how you'd go about searching for them. I suppose if you go to /MySpace Tom. Yep, MySpace Tom. He's got 1,318 followers.
Well, that's important.
And he's got a lot of animated GIFs with sparkles all over them.
That's the way to win on the internet.
Yep, sure is.
All right, so I have an account up there now. You can find me. I'm Dylan Reeve.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, you can definitely get your name on Allo.
Now, they're using the @. I think I'm at Dylan Reeve. They're using the @, so I think Twitter should probably sue them.
That was an innovation created by Twitter's users, not by Twitter. So that'd be a real hard job for Twitter
but it's so synonymous with Twitter now, they could totally sue them.
I'm not sure if that's correct.
It's probably not. I'm not a lawyer.
That's very obvious.
It's very unlikely I would be a lawyer at this point.
Well, especially. You would have to go to law school. Wouldn't you have had to have gotten like even school C or something
before you could go to law school? No, because isn't that the thing that, you know, once you get to a certain
point, after you're 25.
Is it 25?
Yeah, but you'd have 25? To demonstrate to them that you had pretty high level research and so on and study skills, and I don't think you can prove anything.
Well, see, now this feels like a challenge. I feel like I should go to law school just to prove that I can.
If you try and get an LLB, I will do some very minor thing to help support you.
Great. I'm not going to. There's really no risk of this happening.
You actually have a mentality that possibly suits it.
I've people have told me that in the past. That I, you know,
asshole.
I like research and I like arguing.
Being a real frustrating motherfucker. Don't like conjecture.
No.
Like quotes.
I don't know.
First-hand evidence.
It's unlikely that I'm going to become a lawyer. Even less likely that I'm going to become a lawyer for Twitter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is how that started off. It was a very specific assignment, wasn't it?
I'm going to sue Allo on behalf of Twitter once I get a law degree and get hired as corporate counsel for Twitter.
Yeah. So I don't remember when we actually started the show, but I may or may not already have mentioned that we clearly do not have a guest this week.
You didn't mention it clearly or otherwise, but so far we haven't had a guest, and it's a pretty good indication that if we've got this far into the show without introducing a guest, that there isn't one.
Yeah.
Unless, I suppose, we were trying to get one that we'd arranged that weren't lining it up properly.
Yeah.
But that isn't what's happening.
No, this is not a gag. We're not setting it up to suddenly then cut it in with like a scissors snip, snip, snip sound. And then there's, you know, and now we're speaking to Bloobity-Doo from Roof-Doo. That's not going
to
happen.
I was just trying to imagine who I was about to say. And now we're joined by, but I haven't even got a guest to pretend that we're...
David Cunliffe. No. Are you there, David?
We've got a guest on Discourse.
I'd like to have the Prime Minister as a guest.
Not right now. He needs some rest.
Otherwise, he might not be relaxed.
You know what? I've got so many complicated feelings right now about.
Okay, but let's hit this back on the rails as the technology podcast that it is.
Yes,
it was a recent
transport
very recent,
technology.
A very recent new camera announcement.
Oh yes, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the Polaroid Block.
That's no
the Polaroid Block. It's cool because it has got nice friendly colors and it's a little cube, and one of its stands that it comes with, all of these little cameras, of course, I think they probably make most of their money out of the accessories. One of its accessories is a little monkey body, and it goes as the head with one eye on that body. It's a very cool little camera, that little Polaroid. It's got one button on top, so it seems like a great one for children, except for one thing. The quality, from everything that I can gather, is terrible.
It's a potato camera, is it?
It's a potato camera. Now, they might say that it does like 1080p 30 or whatever the baseline is now, but there is ugly 1080p 30 and then there is fine 1080p 30, and it's the version which has that what's it called? Lens whatever, which gives it like purple fringing over everything. And
chromatic aberration.
Chromatic aberration.
That's why we have me on this podcast.
Thank you. I'm grateful. So you're not talking about that one? Oh, in that case, you must be talking about this new one that HTC have just announced, a little action camera.
Have they?
Absolutely. And it looks really cool. It looks kind of like a little white plastic periscope. It's got like a vertical tube and then an elbow angle, and then the lens sticks out the side from there. I have a hunch. Well, it might be that the sensor is in that top bit, or it might be that to put like a more interesting and complicated lens arrangement in it, they have some sort of mirror in there.
I zoned out because I'm watching the promo video for the Polaroid Cube, which, dare I say, I'll be honest, I'd kind of ignored it.
Yeah.
It is astonishing. It's the strangest shape,
yep,
which makes it seem like it would be incredibly easy to drop.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of awkward to hold, the little rounded edged cube, although it's rubberized, so maybe. And then the first demonstration we see of it in actual use, really, well, there's a guy standing, you know, filming the Golden Gate Bridge or something. But then he sticks it on the handlebars of his fixie.
Yep.
And I think that tells us some things. Also, it's interesting because it's obviously got a low quality lens.
Well, so here's the thing.
A hazy, odd look about it.
Yeah, it's absolute garbage. Like the picture quality is garbage. It has a 124 degree wide angle lens, which is pretty cool. It's got a 90-minute battery, which is better than the fucking GoPro Hero 3, 3 Plus, and maybe the 4, but we'll see. Here's the thing. It's $99.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And there's a couple of interesting things about it. One is that it has a magnetic base. So it will stick to things like some kinds of handlebars with no other garbage around. It'll just click onto it. Click, just like that. Click. As long as you trust a magnet to hold your camera on.
$99 camera that's rubberized and has plastic lens. So even if you don't trust it to hold the camera on, it might not be a problem.
Yeah. Splash proof and impact resistant, they say. And I think this is actually potentially an interesting device, but version 2 maybe. They probably won't make a version 2 because, I mean, Polaroid must be in absolute death struggles, right? But if they made a version 2, potentially it could have better picture quality. There's no excuse for the kind of bad picture quality.
I think they've done that on purpose, because if you look at it, although it's not quite bad enough to be... Like, I think it's a bit like, you know, the Lomo thing, you know? It's kind of got that weird sort of plasticky lens feeling about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going for the Lomography look, but then it's not quite interesting enough for that.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really work, but it looks like what was that New Zealand camera that I went to the Kickstarter launch of that I can't remember the name of now?
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I really wanted to like it. They said that it was like your automated camera, man. And what they meant was, it's a camera.
Yeah.
It does nothing automatically.
I think it had some cloud uploading capabilities or something. No, it had like an app on your phone that would store. I don't know. It was a bit like this. Same sort of shape, but that was about it. But this is, you know, it's interesting. For $100, you know, I can imagine pretty easily picking it up. Hell, you could just about give it to all your wedding guests. That kind of thing.
That's true, if you wanted really crappy wedding photos. But the reason that you'd be able to do that is that it has one button on top, and if you press it, it takes a photo. You press it again, it takes another photo. You press it again, it takes another photo.
You hold it down, it takes a video, something like that.
Yeah, I think, or you hold it down or you double tap it or something. So it's pretty simple to use. So then HTC also announced a new one, which I can't bloody see the name of it. I can remember what it was. It was like I can't remember. What are their phones called? M8 or something?
It's M8.
Well, it's like that, but it's like the S8 or something. Something stupid like that. Unfortunately, I can't see the thing. But here's the thing. There is some footage of the thing in use. And once again, the picture quality is garbage. Like, it's wobbly and like it's rolling shutter jello-y, and it's got, once again, that kind of purple fringing. And, well, I interpret it as purple. I'm not actually sure if it really is purple there. It's just, I guess, when I see that shitty low quality video, I think of it as purple. Maybe it is purple.
The stuff I saw on the Polaroid one wasn't so much chromatic fringing. It was more about just not having sharp focus towards the edges of the frame.
Yeah.
And that's just a symptom of having a low quality lens.
Yeah. So I assume when you say that this camera has been released, you're either talking about the Polaroid Cube or you're talking about this HTC thing that I can't remember the name.
Of course, I was talking about both of those that I hadn't really heard of and knew nothing about.
Yeah.
It might be called
the Re-Camera.
Okay. What I certainly wasn't talking about was the GoPro Hero, because we're all familiar with that.
We're very familiar with the GoPro Hero. You're talking about the 3 Plus.
No, I'm talking about the GoPro Hero 4.
Oh.
Amazing. There's a new one.
Yeah.
Which is, I'll send you the link to put in the show notes.
Oh, because I won't be able to find it.
Yeah, you won't be able to. You'll never be able to find the link to the promo video for the new GoPro Hero 4. They've made a new promo video.
Is amazing.
So
it is so beautiful.
If you used a GoPro in the past,
I have.
One of the things that's most annoying about dealing with the footage from them is because the camera's, you know, basically fully automatic. When the light changes or when the conditions change, the camera, you know, tends to adjust. So you can end up in certain circumstances, especially with lots of jumping between exposure levels and sometimes color, you know, white balance.
Yeah.
So the colors go all fucky and the exposure goes all fucky. One of the coolest things about the new one is you can turn that off. You can lock down a specific exposure level.
Right.
Which I think makes a huge difference in a lot of the footage we've seen in the new promo video, because, you know, situations where it would have trouble coping with, you know, like bright light changes and stuff. Like there's one, there's a whole portion of it's at a concert at night in Germany somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, big pyrotechnics and big light flashes and stuff, which with an older GoPro would tend to freak it out.
Yeah.
You'd get, you know, as the lights went up, it would dip down. Doesn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So that's really good. It's 4K, because God knows.
Well, the 3 Plus was 4K as well, but
the 3 Plus was 4K at an unsustainable frame rate. It was like
15 frames
per second. It was not fast enough to be proper motion.
Now they
do 18 or something.
4K at 24, 25, and 30.
Yeah.
So but they also only do 1080p at 120. But the new iPhones do 1080p, I think, at 240.
Yeah, I haven't seen much footage of that yet. I'm sure if I went looking, I'd find it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that they don't do the 240 frames per second, but I guess there's only so fast they can read the sensor, I suppose.
Yeah.
Regardless of what how they've cropped it or what windowing they're doing.
So Philip Bloom has had one for only about a week, and I don't rate him hugely, but he has tested it, and he said that the 720p 120 was a bit garbage.
Yeah, so typically with a camera like that, when you get to 720, what you're doing is you're throwing away a lot of pixels.
Yeah.
So you tend to get really jaggedy kind of, because the easiest way to read a sensor faster, a CMOS sensor faster, is to just ignore parts of it.
Yeah.
So you line skip. So you throw away information that you don't want. You just don't even bother reading it off the sensor. Then you can get through the sensor quicker.
Yeah.
And so as you throw away more stuff, you get temporal aliasing. So you get spatial aliasing. There's information missing between one row of pixels and the next in your finished picture. So you get a jaggedy look. So I'm guessing at 720 they must be doing a lot of that.
Yeah. So they have lots of new features. Some we'll have to wait and see. Some are like, who gives a shit, honestly. But some, I think, are potentially very interesting or very useful, at least. For instance, one thing that has really bothered me about my GoPros is that to start the thing up, you have to press the button on the front and then you have to press another button to start recording. But you probably got the thing mounted to something, like on your mountain bike helmet or on a chesty rig or somewhere or other. And it's really annoying having to press a couple of times. So they have a new mode where if you push the top button when it's off, it turns on and immediately starts recording.
Yeah, and quite quickly too.
Like, duh, of course it should have already been doing that.
So now the other thing they've done is they've released two versions of the Hero 4, the black and the silver. They have
slightly different. And that fucks me off so much.
Well, they don't have the white this time. They had the black and silver and the white.
Oh no, but
the
differences are so much bigger this time.
Oh yeah, yeah. But that's quite good because it was a little bit confusing.
It's not good. No, it's terrible. It's diabolically terrible. The Hero 4 black, right, is the one which has all of the special new features.
Yep, so that's right. The one that's going 4K at 30 frames per second.
The silver is the one that has the touch screen built in.
Yeah, so it's basically...
The silver is cheaper and has a screen on it. The black has no screen.
That's right.
This is fucking ridiculous.
It is a strange distinction. So the thing about the silver
is... The cheaper one has a screen. The more expensive one has no screen.
The silver is basically the old Hero 3 black, as far as I can tell, with some, you know, slight redesign, but it's got essentially the same capabilities as the old Hero 3 black.
Yeah.
But it has a touch screen built in.
Yeah.
The Hero 4 Black is the one that does the faster frame rates and the bigger, you know, the bigger stuff.
Honestly, the 4 Black is probably the one you want to get. You probably don't want to get the silver.
Probably, but if you're just playing around, there's another thing they've done, and that's they've released the GoPro Hero, just called the Hero, not the Hero number, anything.
Yeah, but that's like a 2 or something, isn't it?
It's basically, it's kind of like the Hero 2, but it's only $130 US.
Right, and that's what they used to call the white.
Yeah, pretty much. much.
Here's the weird thing about it. That's the nicest looking one.
So it's built into its case permanently. You can't take that one out of the waterproof case.
Right. Why would you take it out of its case?
Well, some accessories are easy to use when it's not in its case. For example, if you wanted to be running power into it for a long time that you didn't want to just keep running on the batteries, you can't do that when it's in its waterproof case.
Which you literally have to do because the battery life on these things is a joke.
It's not great.
It's very frustrating is what it is. And that's why I got a bunch of extra batteries. And guess what they've done with the Hero 4?
Change the battery format.
Yes, motherfuckers. Now, hopefully that has increased the battery life, but who knows, because they've put a much more powerful processor in it, which I am going to assume uses a lot more juice. And so for all we know, the battery life might even be worse in real use.
Now, for what it's worth, the battery for the Hero 4 is only $20 US, so it's not crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, I got my extra ones. They were pretty cheap as well, you know. And you'll be able to get other chargers. You'll be able to get them on Deal Extreme. I got some on Deal Extreme, and I got some real ones, you know, some original ones.
Cool camera, anyway. GoPros are just stupid fun to play with.
I'm probably going to get one, but only once I can get one for not that full price, because that's expensive.
The price will stay at that price, though. I mean, the GoPros don't get much cheaper.
They potentially can get cheaper if you can get them, for instance, duty free.
Sure, that's true.
Because this is like $150 of just getting them into the country.
So New Zealand price, let me just look, is six.
On the GoPro site, it's $699 New Zealand dollars.
Including GST?
I have absolutely no idea. No, because this is from GoPro.com. There'd be no GST on it.
So let me tell you how much it is here from my friends, probably either at DVT, who helped us out with our
I think it was about $670.
Or, yeah, A to Z. That was, I think, $670, $680 maybe, including GST.
Yeah. So weirdly enough, they've managed to reach a price where you have to buy it locally or you're an idiot, which is cool, because support DVT, right?
So $750 including GST for the black is how much it will cost from, that's from A to Z. I haven't got a price from DVT, but it's probably not dissimilar. And so my pricing, it was $500 US to buy it from B&H, and then that's $650 US plus shipping through a U-Shop would be another $30, making it $672 shipped to New Zealand, excluding GST. You'll have to pay GST.
No, you don't include the U-Shop in that, because you pay GST on the U-Shop, so you can exclude it from the total price.
What's that? You pay GST. Oh, okay. But still, you're going to end up paying about $800
if you buy it from
B&H or somewhere like that and ship it to New Zealand through a third-party shipper, because they won't ship directly to New Zealand.
Which is pretty tough for a disposable camera.
It's not cheap.
You know, it makes it very clearly not a disposable camera. You can buy a DSLR for $800.
On the plus side, the Hero 3 Plus will probably get cheaper, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you like little fun cameras to play with, they're great. I have a Sony Action Cam, which I also quite like.
Yeah.
Which is not as functional, not as, you know, full of fanciness as the Hero 3, but was cheaper. In fact, half the price.
Yeah.
Which is why I bought it.
I think there's something to be said with those cameras. There's something to be said for not, like you don't want to break this stuff. You know, even if it was $50, you wouldn't want to break it. But there's a point where you're like, you wouldn't be too worried. Like, if you got the shot, you wouldn't be heartbroken if the thing broke. I think at $800, you'd be pretty fucked off. No matter how good the shot was, you'd be like, my fucking camera, holy shit.
Yeah. So the one I got, which was the Sony AS30, which is their little, it's kind of like a more elongated shaped action.
More like a contour.
Yeah, kind of a little bit fat in that.
Yeah.
That was only $250 US.
Yeah.
Maybe even less than that. So that's, you know, it was like half the price, but it was it doesn't have some of the features that the GoPros have, but it did have on the flip side, it has built in Wi-Fi, which I don't think at the time the ones I was looking at did.
So I got one of
GPS, if you give any shits about that.
GPS is great if you're using it as a travel camera.
Yeah.
Really great. I got one of my...
And I think I left one in a rental car. So one of my, one now. I bought two.
I hope you had taken the card out.
I don't think it had one in it, but it's... I don't know. I haven't obviously lost
it. How did you manage to do that?
Well, I'm not entirely sure if I did leave it in a rental car. I don't think I did, but that's the only place I can figure out it could have been.
Right.
And if someone stole it from my luggage, which is also possible.
I got one of my blacks from... you went to whatever the hell that US Expo is.
NAB.
And you came back with an NAB code.
That's right.
Which is like 100 $100 off the GoPro.com site. And that meant plus U-Shop, it was below the threshold. And so I think I got it for like 400 New Zealand or something.
Yeah, yeah. That was
pretty nice.
I was totally prepared when I was at NAB and I had that code. I was totally prepared to go and buy it. I went to the GoPro stand only to find out.
Sold out?
No, they're not allowed. They're not allowed to sell things at the show. So they weren't. That's why you're getting a voucher to then buy it online. I was like, fuck. Well, I had cash on me. I would have had they still had them there for sale. I would have given them cash and walked away with one.
Yes, I was very grateful for that code.
Oh well, there you go.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the low light performance. I guess
looks pretty good in the new ones. Yeah. In the new one, I suppose the top end one. I don't know what the silver's like. I don't know if it has the newer sensor in it or not.
There's a difference between like professionally set up though and professionally coloured.
Well, maybe we can talk to Bradley Ambrose, who you may remember as the teapot guy.
Yeah,
but he is now more possibly more familiar to at least YouTube viewers as the abseiling into volcanoes guy.
Yeah,
and he and Jeff Mackley shot a bunch of the footage that's in the promo video in a volcano in Vanuatu, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, if I guess I'll get one at some point, but I don't want to pay $700. I want to pay under $600. I might be dreaming, or maybe I'll pick one up in another country next time I'm out of the country. But the thing is, I guess, you know, that's sold as a way of recording all the amazing epic adventures that most people just don't have.
No, it's funny. You buy one of those cameras, you use it like obsessively for a week. You're like, oh, I'm going to stick it on my fork while I eat my dinner.
Yeah.
And that's kind of funny. You look at the footage, you're like, this is amazing. And then you put it in the cupboard and you never touch it again. You go, and one day you're like, oh, I was going to go mountain biking. What if I should get the GoPro out? Oh, no, I won't.
Can't be bothered.
Yeah.
So I actually have shot mountain biking trips out at Woodhill with GoPro and lots of fishing stuff, including deep underwater fishing stuff, but it's not like the promo video. That's for damn sure. It's not like
that. Clearly you failed.
I feel like I had very successful times. It's just my videos aren't that good.
Okay, well, I'll let you off this time.
Appreciate it. Who's not getting let off?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
I hoped you'd know, because I don't. David Cunliffe, perhaps.
Oh, God.
So Labour are imploding, and like no one who's put their hand up is remotely appealing to me. And I think we've got to count them out basically for another term. And National are going to win next time. I'm calling it. Ice the cupcakes, starting now.
All right, I'll get the cupcake icing lined up.
Yep. Just make it all blue. Just ice 70 blue.
So David Farrer, fucking, I'm doing it now.
Seriously?
And I know them both.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making a documentary with one of them. God, yeah. I hope it's not the fat, bald...
he's not that fat anymore.
No, he's not. He's lost a lot of weight. I hope it's not the bald National Party guy.
Yeah.
That I'm making. Anyway, David Farrer put a thing on Facebook.
You are heaps fatter than he is. So I don't know. I don't know if you should go straight there.
I shouldn't. It's unfair. Take the fat bit out. Ignore that. Delete it from your minds.
Yes.
I don't do that sort of thing. I don't know what's wrong with me.
It's a good thing we didn't make a big deal out of it.
Nah, good. No, easy to remove.
Yeah.
He posted a thing which was a trend of Labour's results.
Since like 1940 or something.
Yeah.
And it looks pretty terrible. What does National's equivalent look like though?
It also trends downward, probably because of the introduction, mostly I think because of the introduction of MMP, or largely because of that, but not nearly as much.
Mm.
So I don't know why that is.
I think it's because there are fewer parties on the right. It's that simple.
Maybe
there's fewer credible parties. Like,
so I wonder if you did the same thing again and you added Labour and Greens together, perhaps, because they're really the only left wing parties. Like, you can't, because when I was looking at the results, I was like, well, what happens if we add all the left wing parties together? I'm like, well, Labour and the Greens. Oh, I suppose Mana as well this time around. They're the ones who are decidedly left wing.
New Zealand First is centre, so yeah, it's very hard to say.
And they can trend quite right in some areas. And the Māori Party,
they're pretty centre as well.
Yeah, again, I suppose they have slightly more
some of their policies are pretty left. Yeah,
But I mean, you know,
and you'd expect that United Future would be left wing, but
they certainly don't seem to be.
No.
So Labour and the Greens seem to be the only left wing parties.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see what happens if you did that same graph and then added them together. I still don't think it would be particularly impressive though.
No.
Because, you know, obviously you look at the results in the Parliament, it's like, well, you know.
Well, you know, the only constant is change. And And I'm quite comfortable with the election result now. And not merely because there's no choice but to be comfortable with it, because, I mean, if I was uncomfortable, it's not like that changes the result. But just because that is democracy. Like I had a government that I was pretty happy with for three terms, pretty happy with. And not a lot of Nationals' big policies I can't stand, but they also have stolen a lot of left-wing parties. And that's one of the secrets of stealing votes away from Labour, because they do actually both occupy mainly the middle.
Yeah, it'd be certainly, if you drew a Venn diagram type thing of them, I think there's a lot of commonality. Certainly.
And I'm very happy for them to steal, you know, some Labour. I'm not a fan of all of Labour's policies, or I might have voted for them.
I think I've said it before, but none of our mainstream political parties, or even largish political parties, are especially right in the sense that we might, you know, if you put New Zealand political parties on a US political spectrum, they'd probably all fall left of the Democrats, I think.
That's probably true, because they assume that, like, socialized medicine is a thing that's here to stay.
Yeah, exactly. No one's planning to move that away. They might tinker with it.
Some kind of welfare is all right. Now,
and fuck with people's, you know, various welfare and things, but it's not, they're not taking, not dismantling the system.
But it's really dangerous to look at things that way.
It is,
because it can change really quickly. And National have borrowed strategies from the Republicans, and they might borrow policies from them as well.
I think it is useful to look at it that way as well, though, because there are people, you know, Facebook is the place where I see the most diversity in political opinion. On Twitter, I don't see...
No, it's pretty left.
Certainly the people I associate with on Twitter are a bit more... But left, and also kind of moderate left. Yeah. You know, they're the ones who weren't screaming from the rooftops when National won again and predicting collapse of... Yeah. Yeah. New Zealand society. Whereas in Facebook, there are people I know who are much more both hard left and hard right, I guess. And there were quite a lot of people who, you know, who really are predicting the collapse of New Zealand society with another Labour, with another National government. And I don't think that's... I think, you know, people say they're all the same. You know, don't vote, it just encourages them and all that. They're all the same, it doesn't matter.
It's definitely not correct.
It's not entirely correct, but it sort of is a little bit.
No, it's definitely not correct.
No, but, you know, in that for the majority of us, maybe the majority of us anyway, Labour or National led government doesn't make a massive difference to our day-to-day lives. It might, you know, when we talk about things like asset sales and you know, perhaps mining and things like that, you know, it might have a significant impact on the shape of the country and perhaps the future in some ways, but it's not, you know, it's not, we're not veering dramatically one way or another.
Yeah,
like, it's not the end of the world. We don't see the things that we'd like to see happen, and we get to yell at the TV or the newspapers some more and bitch about the government. But we do that even if our party won. We'd bitch about them not doing the things that they should do.
So on Facebook, this evening I saw that one of my Facebook friends had posted something about, like, the Centers for Disease Control have found that fluoride has definitely got, like, a psychoactive bloody blast. So why are we still allowing it to be put in water?
Oh, this is the IQ one, the Harvard study. The fluoride decreases the IQ of children in a Harvard study.
It may have been Harvard, yeah.
Yeah, that's that one. That one turned up on my Facebook wall recently as well.
I have to say I did not give it a click, so I don't know how deep that goes.
It's not well researched, and a larger study from New Zealand, in fact, from Otago, disputes the findings entirely and says that there's no such connection.
You might have a scientist that says one thing, but I'm sure I can find a scientist with an opposing view.
I bet you can.
There are not many opposing... Now, I'm going to talk about a woman's appearance for a moment, and it's not because she's a woman, it's because her haircut is terrible. And if she was a man with that haircut, people would comment on it. Because she's a woman, it seems like she's off limits, and that's Paula Bennett. Her haircut is terrible, and someone has to do something.
Where do I see this haircut?
I don't know. Google for Paula Bennett. There should be enough. It's just, it makes your head look so big. It's too flat in the wrong places. Like, she has a great big block head. And if there was a man with the same haircut, people would go, gosh.
Is it a new one?
Yes.
Is it her shorter sort of?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's not.
No, it's terrible.
She looks much nicer with the sort of longer, I can't describe haircuts because I'm terrible. But the one I'm seeing here, yeah, that is not.
I feel comfortable talking about that and criticizing it because we do talk about some of the men's hair. So, like, people talk about Peter Dunn's hair a lot because they talk about it positively, but they talk about it a lot.
Because Peter Dunn's hair is amazing.
So I think it's
Winston Peters also.
I think it's fair game to talk about politicians' hair because of that. But Paula Bennett needs better haircut. Actually, also, now this is unrelated. I was watching Campbell, and they had this very 7 Sharp level of piece. about Collins selling like a holiday house or something. It's a 6-bedroom place. And I just couldn't get over the feeling that it was really cheap.
Yeah, that stuff.
Everything in the place, it just looked really cheap. Like all the doorknobs were really cheap, right. Like commercial doorknobs, and all the walls were like cheap,
but, you know,
titanium white paint.
It could easily swing the other way and you could go, just imagine if it was, you watch like American, there's so many like American reality shows where you see in people's houses and it seems very common in America. I don't know if it is, but where they have just terrible interior design, like horrible furniture and disgusting fittings and awful interior design. It just seems something specific about America.
Yeah.
I'd love their wood paneling and weird, horrible furniture.
Yeah.
So it could have swung that way. You can imagine, you can see the doorknobs and they could be those like plastic gemstone doorknobs. You know the ones, the big doorknobs that are plastic like gemstones. Tussock,
I like ceiling roses and dado rails and picture rails and stuff. So, you know, but that's very traditional kind of New Zealand interior decorating stuff. And it's, you know, it's the stuff that I grew up with in, you know, the family house. I think many of us probably did. And there were just, there was none of that in this place. It was all just like edges and corners and it was just yuck. Like the doors looked like commercial doors, like those cheap, like cardboardy cavity doors. It was like, oh, I don't mean cavity sliders. I mean,
hollow. They're filled with like a cardboard mesh.
And it was just gross. And I was like, why are they showing us this piece of shit house? You know, it was very modern and stuff. And I'm sure that the bathrooms were perfectly nice, but everything was cheap. And I was just like, what is going on here? Why is this on television? And it was weird. It was like maybe a producer's left, Seven Sharp and has gone over to Campbell and is really shitting up the quality of the show.
Yeah.
You know, a show that hasn't been shitted up yet.
No, I don't, but I'm looking forward to hearing your thing.
So did you see the John Oliver thing about drones?
Yes.
The flying death robots? Well, I mean, there's probably not much point in talking about it. I think all of our listeners probably agree that drones are a fantastically good idea in some respects and a really, really terrible idea in most respects.
It's that thing, it's like it's the slippery slope argument. You know, it's like you think, you know, it seems like a reasonable approach to this in some circumstances, but it can so easily be not reasonable. And when you look at the bigger picture, which is they believe they can fly these aerial death machines anywhere they want and kill anyone they want for any reason they want without telling us or Americans.
Yeah.
That's pretty shocking.
Yeah.
And you can't possibly imagine, like, it's hard to, like, if Russia was doing it, like if Russia were aerially bombarding countries and killing people that they claimed were a risk to Russia.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine America standing by and being okay with that. Or China. Imagine if China were doing it.
There'd be all out war.
So why is it? I just don't understand why it's okay. And we all can stand back and say, well, I mean, it's kind of like, and I'm getting dangerous, I'm skirting dangerously close to an awkward subject, but it's kind of like the way Israel can use the Holocaust to justify anything.
Yeah.
You can, you know, no matter what happens, there's always the comeback of well, we suffered through the Holocaust, basically. I mean, even if it's not explicit, it's sort of implicit. And then the US seems to have the same thing with 9/11. You know, well, terrorists.
9/11. 9/11. Everything changed.
Exactly. And you think, wow, fuck, I just, no, it's not okay.
Yeah. Because it's not just Afghanistan and Iraq. Not that that would be sweet, right?
Well, but at least those are places where, you know, where the US was or is in open warfare.
Yeah.
No, it's Syria and Lebanon and
Yemen, Somalia.
Yes.
Just Libya.
All these places. You're like, fuck.
Algeria.
And it was amazing that one of the best things in the John Oliver bit was going back to the first one and basically saying right from the beginning they killed the wrong person and wouldn't even say that.
Yeah.
So we don't know who we killed, but we're pretty sure the person we killed should have been killed.
So I think it would make more sense for New Zealand, for example, to invest in drones than to invest in like bombers with pilots.
Yeah.
But like, and it'd be hard to argue against using, well, I mean, some people only like peace and they don't see any justification for war. But some people disagree on that. If you were shooting a tank, you can be reasonably sure that there are combatants involved, right?
Yeah, usually.
But if you're shooting like a group of people in a field and it turns out to be a wedding, like there is nothing that you could have seen, realistically that told you that those were a fair target, right? And that seems to happen over and over again. If you shoot a wedding dress
looks quite a lot like a one of those, you know, those Arabic sort of gowns that probably terrorists wear.
Because they're Arabs.
Yes.
Yeah, it's probably.
You know what though? When you think about the New Zealand military's role, or the Air Force specifically, what do they spend most of their time doing?
Search and rescue.
Search and rescue and maritime patrol.
And flying flying junkie around.
Okay, so with the exception of the John Key thing, drones seem really ideally suited to the other two things we do.
Absolutely. Like, search. Hell yes.
We don't need to arm them because we don't need to shoot boats.
Yeah.
But they've got some amazing camera equipment now. Like putting those drones up and flying them around New Zealand to spot people illegally fishing in New Zealand waters or doing search and rescue stuff, that seems like a bloody brilliant idea.
Absolutely fantastic.
We should totally invest in drones and ideally make it clear that they are drones that cannot be armed. That would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I strongly agree. I endorse your proposal.
But of course the problem is, you know, then the Air Force would start surveilling New Zealand citizens with it. Well, the Air Force wouldn't. The GCSB would.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Or the police.
I'm definitely sure that would happen.
Have you seen, vaguely...
Just imagine how small these guys' budgets are for that kind of thing. There's just no way that we'd do it here. So it's like, okay, yeah, well, the NSA would sponsor it. Yeah, they fucking would not.
You watch any of that.
They're happy to look at all our emails, but they don't have any interest in seeing us in our pools or at the beach because, like, there is no useful intelligence to be gathered from flying over populated New Zealand areas.
If you watch the various intelligence-y spy kind of shows, like 24 is the obvious one, but there's a bunch of others.
Yeah.
And you see that, Homeland is another good one. You see that, you know, the types of things that these intelligence agencies apparently do, you know, like when they need to, they've suddenly got this, you know, this fully equipped spying communications van with all these things. You think, there's just no way a New Zealand agency has that shit at their fingertips. They'd be like, oh, we need a communications van. Oh, well, my mate Barry's got a van. We can probably take some of the stuff out of the server rack and kind of bolt it to the floor in the back.
We'll need a generator and we'll need to put that out the back because otherwise the fumes would probably get to us.
It's just, like, honestly, I think that's how it would end up.
Yeah.
If there is a surveillance van, there's probably one of them. And, you know, once you've seen it once, you're like, ah, that's the surveillance van. Like, there's this particular four-wheel drive Nissan Pathfinder that drives around that you can look at and you go, oh, that's the Special Tactics Group Pathfinder. But have you seen Four Lions film?
London?
Chris Morris.
Is it about England?
Yes, it is. It's about Islamic terrorists in England.
Maybe.
It's a comedy, a black comedy.
Maybe.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah.
It's both funny and a bit depressing.
Four Lions. IMDb 7.3.
Yep, gets a good rating.
I'll allow it.
Don't know if it's on Netflix or anything.
I will allow it. Other things we could talk about. Two more things that I'm interested in talking about. Fall TV season started.
Yeah, Melanie's very excited because suddenly everything she likes to watch has turned up on Hulu.
Survivor
she's into. And then a bunch of the sort of slightly surreally drama shows that she watches that I don't watch.
Uh-huh.
But she started watching the next series of Blacklist, but she'd forgotten what happened in the last series of Blacklist. So she started again from scratch and now I've started watching Blacklist. But I've fallen behind, so I can't watch Blacklist with her because I have to catch up.
You really don't.
I quite enjoy it. I like James Spader.
No, what I'm saying is you don't need to catch up.
I do need to catch up. It's got a serialized story. Haven't you heard? It's the idea that so many TV shows are trying to emulate now is the success of Blacklist with its serialized story. And I'm like, how is this a new thing for Blacklist? There's a headline that's been in a bunch of newspapers, I guess some sort of syndicated article, and it's new fall shows mix it up by adding serialization Blacklist style. Like, what? Stupid, what? Like, place some blame on this for this on Blacklist, the NBC drama that has successfully mixed catching a bad guy every week with a deeper ongoing mystery about the relationship between the central characters. It's like isn't that every show? Like, every one of those shows, like Castle. NCIS and every one of those shows that have the thing and then the other thing.
There's always arcs, short arcs and long arcs.
The long arc that stretch. I don't. Criminal Minds, like everything. Surely. Anyway, but apparently
Survivor amazingly is up to season 29.
It is pretty crazy.
Amazing Race season 25.
But South Park is like 18 years old, isn't it?
Isn't that extraordinary?
21 or something. Like, South Park is old.
It's absolutely amazing.
Simpsons is very old.
Yeah.
The Simpsons and Family Guy just did a crossover.
Yeah, I haven't watched yet.
Neither have I.
Maybe instead of you talking about shows that you don't watch that your wife has told you about, maybe we can talk about stuff that I've actually watched, which is why I brought this up.
Yeah, I'm gonna accept that. I will will allow that.
Now, first up, I have watched Survivor and Amazing Race, only the first episode of the new season, because I think that's all that's available so far.
Sounds right.
Honestly, I don't feel particularly interested in either of them, but, you know, we'll see. However, Manhattan is still on. I think one more episode to go. It's another one of these silly, like, 13-episode seasons, I think. Or maybe it's an 11-episode season.
That's the period sort of drama about the Manhattan Project?
Yeah. And I'm really enjoying it.
Melanie was getting into that. She watches so much more TV than I do.
Yeah.
She was into that.
And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a Marvel Universe thing, has just started season 2.
Just get her on to have these television conversations.
Or you could just shut up and let me talk.
Don't want to.
So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a show that I really deeply lost interest in because they spent a lot of time building up to, there was essentially, it was tied in with Captain America Winter Soldier, which was a really good movie. I'm amazed, as you may be, if you've seen the first Captain America movie, it was dull. Like, it was shit. All that stuff with the Red Skull, didn't give a fuck about any of that. But Winter Soldier, it's different. It's just like, suddenly he's a super soldier kicking ass like Jason Bourne, jumps out of planes without a parachute and just assumes he's going to survive because he's a bad motherfucker. And it's really a very exciting watch. But as part of that, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. gets utterly destroyed. And now the TV show is basically picking up the pieces after the movie.
So, if I remember correctly, when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. first started, you were really into it. And then, so it was that one of those
things. For about a day,
the first few episodes, you were like, yeah, this is great.
I was like, I'm not really sure, but I'm excited.
Right.
And then I stopped watching because it was just like, oh my God, another guy with a thing on his arm. Please stop with the guys with the things on their arms.
What else is new?
The Flash. It's actually not quite out yet, I think. So this is a spin-off from The Arrow. Well, it's a bit misleading to put it that way. It's pretty clear that they wanted to make this. So they introduced Barry Allen into The Arrow, and it was very clear what the purpose was of having him there. And now they have, quote, spun off, and he is turning into The Flash. The Flash is one of the best characters.
That's the running fast superhero guy, right?
Yes. He is powered by cosmic speed or something ridiculous. I don't really know about comics. All that stuff is stupid. You know what, though? The X-Men movies do superpowers the best.
They've got the least ridiculous, maybe, premise for their superpowers, which is always just some sort of crazy genetic mutation.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at someone, like, it would be, I bet someone's done it. You go back to all the original comics that a lot of these characters are based on, and you find out it would be interesting to categorize what superpowers various comic characters have had and how. You've got your radioactive spiders, you've got your aliens. Yeah. I don't know. There's probably, I bet in the 50s and 60s when some of them were starting up, there were some completely nutty origin stories.
Yeah.
And you see that, you know, where in future iterations, they've then tried to kind of rewrite the origin story to be a little less camp, or is that the right word? I don't know. Try to make it a bit more hardcore. I don't really know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, thank you. So I was actually about to say that the X-Men movies have done superpowers better than anyone else has done. So, for instance, one example is, I can't remember which X-Men movie it was, maybe two. They had Nightcrawler doing the kind of teleporty fight stuff better than we've ever seen teleporty fight stuff done before or since. And in the most recent X-Men Days of Future Past, we saw Quicksilver do the move fast thing better than we've ever seen the move fast thing done before or since. And I just have a feeling that The Flash is going to be terrible. Terrible.
What's that thing where you take something you kind of expect from a film budget thing and push it into a television budget thing, and you think,
it's
kind of hard to deliver such stunning stuff on a small note.
Nah.
Don't think that's going to be it.
Nope.
Just going to be shit or otherwise.
In the age of, like, all the brilliant 3D tracking stuff, which, you know, I mean, all these motherfuckers have that same stuff. I mean, even if you've just got After Effects, you can get somewhere there with, you know, kind of fake 3D stuff so you can have slow particles in the shot and just people standing still. You know what I mean? Like, there are ways to do these things. And it's not as good, but it's better than the stupid thing that they will do, which will be cars driving obviously really slowly and then sped up. And then, like, a blur that just gets swiped through the shot, you know?
Wow, you've really set your bar quite low.
Well, that's really, it is what I expect.
Oh, I hope they exceed that, because that does, I'm sure they could do better than that. I'm sure they'll do better than that.
What was the Sam Jackson one with the guy who could teleport?
No idea.
Sam Jackson, IMDb. This was a promising movie that sucked.
Snakes and planes involved?
No. God, he makes a lot of movies.
Yeah, I was going to say that you're going to have trouble finding it that way.
Whoa, wow, he makes Jumper. Jumper was the movie with Telly Porter.
Oh, was it?
And I think it may have been made after this X-Men movie that I'm talking about. And it was just like, it was frustrating watching them fuck up teleport fighting. It was really frustrating because they've been shown how to do it right. It's meant to be
Jumper. The one
where like they ended up in the desert with like one of those a London double decker bus, and it was all very.
The reason I remember Jumper is because it was possibly the first major feature film to shoot entirely on red, and so entirely on the red camera. So when I was, it was about the time that I was involved in doing stuff with the red camera, and so everyone was all like crazy excited about it.
Yeah.
On the red forums and. And then it all went a bit quiet when the movie came out and turned out it was a bit shit.
Yeah, well, for one thing, it starred Hayden Christensen, who was partly responsible for ruining Star Wars for a generation.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Right.
With his amazing acting, which basically he continued into this piece of shit movie. Oh, God, what a piece of garbage. Like, you can teleport, and okay, a lot of people would rob a bank. That would be one of the things they'd do. That is absolutely true, and they would set up bases. That's cool. But then, like, they just blew it with stuff that should have been easier. Like, they built kind of a universe in which things felt like they should be great, and then they just, like, fucked it up with Hayden Christensen.
Speaking of movies that were fucked up, did you ever... we should make a... Like, I can't do it because I don't watch enough movies, but a movie review podcast of shitty movies.
Yeah. So I don't want to watch shitty movies.
So you can rail on your shitty movies because you do it so well. Did you see Monuments Men?
Actually, no.
Just as well.
It's got John Goodman in it, and what's his name? The handsome chap.
John Goodman and Matt Damon and George Clooney and
Clooney's
a whole bunch of people. And it should be good based on the people who are in it. Like, you're like, oh yeah, they make pretty good. I think it was George Clooney directed it, and you're like, yeah, he's made some pretty cool movies, and it's shit.
Right.
But it's shit because the best that I could tell when I watched it, the thing that I said when I came out. And this is the last movie I saw in the theater because I see them so fucking infrequently.
Yeah.
The thing is, I watched it and I came out at the end and I went, it feels like it was a 3-hour movie and the studio made them cut it down to an hour and a half.
Right.
Because there's just all these bits that start and never finish, and all these bits that finish and didn't really start. And he's like, what the fuck has just happened? It spans a really long period of time and jumps between places and times. And you're like, I don't know what's happening. Terrible film.
If you need 3 hours to tell a story, just make a 3-hour movie. I just don't see the problem.
Yeah, terrible film, but an interesting, like, it was an interesting story, and you're like, how, because it's a true-ish story, you're like, how have they told an interesting story so badly?
Yeah.
George Clooney, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, Kate Blanchett, John Goodman, oh yeah, those people should make a good film.
Sounds like they should.
They did not make a good film, although on IMDb it has a 6.1 rating, so fuck knows what's going on there.
6.1 isn't very good. Jumper has a 6.
It's not as bad as it could be.
6.1 is pretty bad. I wouldn't watch a 6.1.
Well, there you go, don't watch it. No. Done.
I'm not sure where I would watch from. Like, if I was in the mood for total garbage, high sixes maybe, but I think movies only start getting good from about 7.4 upwards. Let's see, the movie that I've watched the most is a terrible film, and what's it got? 7.2. oh yeah,
what,
Mark Wahlberg and Shooter, 2007.
I've seen that. Is that the one where
a marksman living in exile is coaxed back into action after learning of a plot
that's right, to stop the assassination of the president. They're like,
ultimately double crossed and framed for the attempt, he goes on the run to find the real killer.
That's
and the
right.
reason he was set up.
That was a great film.
It's terrible and I love it.
It's great because it's got Mark and Mark in it. There you go. Look, it gets a 31. Monuments Men gets 31% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I'm just going to look up Shooter now because I'm curious. Marky Mark is the best.
The great thing with knowing that all the long pauses are going to be cut out is that we don't need to worry about long pauses.
Shooter gets 48%. That's like half good.
Average rating 5.6.
80% of the audience like Shooter. So there you go. You're not alone. It's a good film.
I've watched it so many times though. I must have watched it 15 times. It doesn't stand up to that much scrutiny.
All right,
but this is the sort of movie that I really enjoy. It's the man against the odds, the one well-trained man. Ideally, he's got some kind of handicap. So, like, Bourne had been shot quite badly. He was meant to have been shot in the head, but in the movie, okay, we'll make it more plausible that he's shot in the body. All right, fine, I can deal with that. But then suddenly it turns out he's an ass-kicking motherfucker. He's here to chew bubblegum and take names or whatever, and he doesn't mind doing both at once. He's got plenty of bubblegum, but he will take your name.
It's such a great cliche, though, isn't it? The you know, the guy who's retired. But gets pulled in for one last big thing that's bigger than him. You know, the it's Rambo, it's Commando,
it's Red
Shooter.
Yep.
Yeah, Red. Yeah, great trope. Should make more of those. So things that I've watched on Netflix that I insist you watch.
Yeah,
maybe. It's a bit of a strong call actually, but on
I can tell you one.
Okay, you go first.
The League.
Is that the TV series?
Yeah,
I'll look it up.
Fantasy football.
I think I do know what you mean. Yes,
it's all right.
It's come up on my suggested queue. I'm going to say you should watch a documentary called
Red Dawn.
No, a documentary called I Know That Voice. I think.
Oh yeah. It's about a voiceover guy, DiMaggio, no. and other voiceovers.
Well, it's produced by him, and it's about all the industry of voiceover and voice acting.
Is that the one where a bunch of them are in the back of a limo at one point?
No, it's not. That was a little skit thing that's on YouTube it's not the voiceover guys. Yeah, it's not those guys so much, although some of them cross over into that. But it's more like the cartoon voices, stuff like that. It's just quite interesting, and a really good documentary that is. I heard about it and never realized how influential it was. It was a documentary from early 70s called
Sesame Street,
Thin Blue Line.
Oh yeah,
and it's by Errol Morris.
Yeah.
And it pioneered a couple of things. One is he's got this style, which has since been called, well, he's refined it and now has this thing called the Interotron. But he's got this style where he has his interview subjects look straight at the camera, which is a little bit unnerving when you first see it, because it's not really what you're used to. Usually in interviews, people look slightly off the camera looking at the person they're talking to.
Yeah.
So that's quite interesting because, it's immediately engaging as a viewer.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is he basically invented the reenactment.
Oh, okay. Are you sure?
Well, in documentary, it wasn't considered it was a huge controversy because I think he was nominated for an Academy Award for it.
Yeah.
And it became a huge thing because the reenactment people were like, well, it shouldn't be called, it shouldn't be a documentary then with these reenactments in it. Makes it not a documentary anymore.
Yeah.
1988, actually, it was much more recent than I thought it was. There you go. Errol Morris, and he's gone on to make a whole lot of quite amazing documentaries. But this one is really interesting because it also was significant in the case that it was covering.
Yeah.
Like it had an impact. No spoilers.
Yeah. 8.1 out of 10. So definitely good. Definitely very, very, very good.
Yep. And he's made this other one called, is it Newsprint or something? It's this just insane story about a woman who kidnapped a man and raped him, basically. But then the insanity that went on afterwards, and he interviews her, and it's crazy. He's made a bunch of very interesting movies.
He made The Fog of War, which I've watched, about Robert McNamara. Yeah.
Yep, and he also made one called Known Unknowns, which is an interview, a really long interview with Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
Which is just it's fascinating hearing him talk in his own words and sort of an amazing insight. There you go. It was rejected from the Oscars for Best Documentary because of the reenactment, because of the scripted content and the reenactments.
The bastards. He must have been gutted.
Yeah, but it became a thing. You know, after that, everyone did it.
It's extraordinary when you look back at the list of movies that did not win Best Oscar.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I don't know if that's one, but
it didn't. It wasn't allowed to be nominated. Okay, so I've run out of things to talk about now.
50 movies you won't believe didn't win Oscars. Very cleverly divided up onto separate pages for each one. Yep, awesome.
Oh god, I hate those. The worst is the ones that, like, for every point, there's like three slides, and you're like, fuck off. And they're not even loaded with Ajax. It's like you click on a button and it loads a new page.
Oh, and it takes forever.
And you're like, how is this a thing?
Fight Club. Well, Fight Club's dated. Shawshank Redemption, I totally buy that one. Rear Window. King Kong. No Best Pictures amongst any of them. That looks like Rebel Without a Cause. I'm not actually clicking on the things. I'm able to slide through the...
right, you're just looking at the thumbnails and trying to figure it out.
Yeah, which makes it really hard. That's Jack Skellington. What was that? Nightmare Before Christmas. That is, I think that's The Professional, a.k.a. Leon. Don't recognize these ones. Don't recognize any of these.
Tabloid is the one I was trying to think of. That's an insane...
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Tabloid is a documentary about a former Miss Wyoming who was charged with abducting and imprisoning a young Mormon missionary.
Reservoir Dogs. Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'm assuming that's probably what that is. Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Oh, God. Damn, there's those three movies, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've spoken before about how good those bloody movies are. They are amazing, and people should watch them, because you might be a little bit like, oh, yeah, the acting is a little bit bloody, but, well, yeah, sure. They were made a long time ago. Look at the composition of the shots. And the stories are very classical, very Shakespearean stuff, you know, literally.
Oh, speaking of Shakespearean, I was going to mention...
Scorpion, am I right? You were going to talk about Scorpion, because it's so high quality.
I was going to talk about a New Zealand web series called...
Flat 3?
No, close. I think Nothing Much to Do. I'm just going to try and make sure I've got it right before I... Well, it's too late. I've already done it now.
Nothing Much to do?
Nothing Much to Do is basically Much Ado About Nothing, presented as a series of vlogs from the characters involved.
Right.
And the people who've made it have put an amazing amount of effort into it and have created like a funny and very authentic feeling thing.
Yeah.
And I just really like it because I think people should be, well, I think we should, as a country, especially because it's New Zealanders, I think we should be encouraging this sort of creativity.
Made with zero budget?
Basically, I don't think they had any real money. They've, from what I know of it, they've taken it on as a they've approached it really professionally, though.
Mary Poppins, Bridge on the River Kwai. What? No, that's not right. No, that got an Oscar. What the hell is this list? This list is bullshit. I'm out of here. Scorpion, though, we can talk once again very briefly about shockingly bad movies. Scorpion is one of them. So the LAX decide they need to upgrade the air traffic control system.
Oh, TV series, sorry.
And they introduce a bug, and that bug shuts down any kind of communications between the towers and planes overhead. And there are like hundreds of planes overhead, of course.
Because it's a major international airport.
That's right. And so the FBI, or someone, NSA, fuck, who cares, bring in this group of misfits, genius misfits, to help out. And the solution turns out to be, after a few false starts, driving a car along a runway very, very fast, dropping an Ethernet cable out of the plane through the footwell with the co-pilot standing.
Not through the footwell, through the landing gear. Climb down the landing gear.
And he drops a yellow Ethernet cable down that then gets plugged into a laptop in the car below so that they can then download the uncorrupted version of the software.
Which is on all planes.
Apparently the plane uses the exact same software as the control towers, and they download that to the to that laptop, which then gets automatically uploaded to LAX, and that's how they save the day. Ethernet cable from a 747 currently in flight run to a very fast car on the ground.
A Ferrari, I believe it was.
They really did that. In the TV
come
show.
On, that's awesome. I watched that. That is
terrible. It is so terrible, and so much of the movie is terrible.
It's a TV series.
TV series. Well, I call it a movie because I'm never going to watch another one. So it's a
very short movie.
Well, I guess I might have to watch another one. I'll hate watch another one.
Melanie, who gives precisely no shits about technical accuracy, enjoyed it. So if you
she's the audience, right?
Exactly. If you can turn off that part of your brain, apparently it's fun.
All right. So how about the guy who is a human computer who can come up with the stats of every possible option that they can try? But what he ends up doing is basically doing, that's the C3PO role, and saying, well, there's a million to one chance. And it's like, it's not useful knowing that. Like, he never provides useful information. All he says is negative stuff about how it's not going to work. And it's like, I mean, I understand why they've got that. It's so, it makes it dramatic for the TV show. But it's such a, it's like, seriously, is that the only reason for the existence of this character, this big fat genius?
So I'm going to leave you with some useful information.
Oh yes, not sure I believe you.
Melanie was watching some TV show that vaguely involved Lorenzo Lamas. You remember him from Renegade in the 90s?
Renegade!
Yeah. So for some reason we ended up looking at IMDb to see what he'd done. He was in a daytime soap in the US called Falcon Crest in the early 80s.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
Scorpion has a 7.4 on IMDb.
That's awesome, I told you.
What the shit?
Yeah, there you go. So anyway.
Okay, but wait one second longer.
Yep.
The promoted user review is one star. Simply the worst script in American history.
Well, now I'm conflicted.
The script was less believable than Sharknado. There's a quote for you.
Sharknado is pretty awesome, though. I mean, Sharknado was fun to watch. Probably in the same. In fact, Sharknado was fun to watch in exactly the same way that scene that I watched. Well, I haven't seen the whole episode, but that scene that I watched with the runway was fun to watch.
Oh my god, though. Okay. Anyway, so what you were saying about Lorenzo Lamas?
Lorenzo Lamas came largely to fame through a daytime soap, I think, called Falcon Crest, where he played a character called Lance Cumson. Cumson.
6.2 out of 10. And is that how they pronounced it?
I don't know how they pronounced it, but that's how it's spelled, so it could be Cumson or Cumson or...
Lorenzo has more kids than you do.
Yep, good for her. But
I wasn't using that as like a counterexample. I wasn't saying that.
You were just saying that more than three kids is insane.
Six.
That's a lot of kids.
More than honestly, look, more than two kids is pretty insane.
I don't disagree.
But you wanted a girl.
Nope.
Last thing, unless you have more to say about Mr. Cumson.
Just not a lot.
So today, no, 2 days ago was the .nz domain name Landrush Day.
Oh, yeah.
I may have purchased too many domains.
Did you happen to buy one for me? Did you get Dylan.nz or Reeve.nz or anything for me?
Did you not?
No, because I don't buy NZ domain names. They're too expensive.
They're $20.
Are they? No, they're cheaper than they used to be. They used to be like $40.
$20 plus GST. So a little bit more than $20. But not
like literally the last time I bought one, it was like $40 a year.
Yeah, that was when it was domains though, right?
No, it wasn't even that long ago. It was
domains,
like
I think, is still about $60, but domains for less is $19.95 plus GST.
Oh, well, there you go. I still don't buy New Zealand domain names. I don't care. I don't buy domain names anymore. I've moved off in that part of my life mostly. Remember when they
Reeve.nz is not available.
Really? Oh, that's disappointing. Remember when they removed the prohibition on swear words and domain names?
Yes.
What did I get? Fucking.net.nz or something?
So I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't want you to get too overexcited.
Okay.
You could get Dylan's.
Oh.
DYLA.nz.
Well, I'll check my PayPal balance and see if it's possible. I'm not going to spend real money on it. I'll just spend my imaginary PayPal money on it.
I don't know if you can use PayPal money with New Zealand registrars.
Well, what's the point? No, can't afford it anyway. Don't have enough imaginary PayPal money.
I've got
$8.86 Canadian dollars in my PayPal.
Right. I don't know what I've got in my PayPal. It's a very long time since I've looked at it. I don't even know how I will log in. I'll go to paypal.com and then we'll see what happens. I have got 16 domain names today.
That's quite a lot.
It's too many. I feel a certain amount of regret. I have ideas for the strange ones that I got. Like some of them are just my name, you know. Naturally, I got my name because I couldn't get my name.com. So I had to get my name.nz. All right. So I live with that. So of course I had to get that. I also got Morgan's. Didn't need that. Let's be honest. I didn't need that. And then I got a bunch, which is sort of, you know, just little silly little ideas that if I build the little site that will go behind them, we'll see what happens. Throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and see what sticks. That's the theory, but I think I've got too many of them under that same theory. Too bloody many.
Well, what can you do, eh?
So that means now I've got like 30 something domain names because I already had a bunch.
So I wonder if they're hoping that the .nz domain name just on its own will become one of those sort of hot domains for short domain names.
I don't think so.
Mm.
I just don't see it. It's actually not a very attractive combination. So I had thought for a very long time, that's going to be much better. And I think it is a lot better, but it actually doesn't look very good.
I still don't like it.
Not compared to like .cc or .co or anything. There's just something very strangely angular about it. It's just, yeah, a little bit. It was ridiculous that we had org.nz, co.nz, net.nz, gen.nz, geek.nz. Ridiculous. Our country is far too small for that. And the fact that we had all of those options and something like 90-95% of 2LDs would be unconflicted, i.e. we only had one name in each of those, you know, spaces, that's ridiculous. So if there was a .co.nz version of a thing, there was about a 90% chance that there were no org, gen or net versions of the same name, right? I think that just tells us that we had far too many 2LDs. Far too many. It's like that mistake that people sometimes make when they set up new forums, you know, new bulletin boards, and they put too many different rooms in, too many sections in.
Yes.
There's just no real justification for it. It's just ridiculous. Having something protected like GOVT, but the way that GOVT is used in New Zealand, it was kind of already compliant with the way that 2LDs now, as of 2 days ago, work. Because if you go to www.govt.nz, you get what you'd expect. If you go to govt.nz, you get what you expect. But for some reason, you know, you couldn't have whatever other type of organization.nz. Now you can. It was stupid the way it was. I think because we copied England or someone, right?
Well, it was, I think at the time that was just a lot of countries did that. Most countries did that.
Yeah. It's a good thing we didn't go with the Australian version though, because .com.au.
They were also horrific. Very restrictive.
Yeah. Yeah. You had to have a registered company name.
Your domain name had to relate to your registered business name.
Yeah. which just seems unnecessary. I mean, you know, you can see the argument for it, and that's the argument that the nerds over there had, but it's also, I feel like it literally should be a lolly scramble, you know, first in, best dressed. It should be open, and the price, though, should be sufficient that people just don't go completely nuts. Like, even with all of mine, it's only, you know, a few hundred dollars a year for my bloody too many domain names. And I didn't squat anything. Like, none of my things that I got are remotely related to anyone else's trademarks or anything that anyone else had. And of course, they couldn't be, because those people would have had the .co.nz, right? And I couldn't have got any of those. So these are, none of them are, I'm not, you know, getting in on anyone else's turf with my stuff. I don't feel like I'm being a squat with my silly number of domains. I've let domains go before, intentionally let them go before. And that's a hard thing to do. I don't know what's going to happen when we change all of the stuff over from, like, Discourse. Obviously, it's going to go to discourse.nz. Because why would it be discourse.co.nz? It's stupid.
Because we're not
a company.
We're a highly profit-focused company.
Yeah. Make sure you get me your TPS report by Friday morning, Dylan.
Discourse.co.nz/VPN.
It's surprisingly expensive. I'm the best salesman.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was, let's call that a show.
It was a long show.
Yeah, considering we had nothing to talk about.
And we started late.
I'm going to go and watch the Simpsons Family Guy crossover now, I think.
I'm going to go to bed.
Oh, Doctor Who had another good episode.
Oh, actually, you know what I've been reading?
No.
I've been making my way through a library book called, which I would like to buy, actually. It's called Prophets of Smoke, I think. P-R-O-P-H-E-T.
Oh, yeah.
Is
it like a Mad Men
Prophets
sort
of
guys?
Meat. It's a basically road trip through Texas barbecue.
Ah, that kind of smoke. Oh, nice.
It's pretty cool.
Maybe next time we can talk about some of the crazy eating videos that I like to watch on YouTube.
$43 from Book Depository. So it's not a cheap book.
The Prophets of Smoke.
Prophets of Smoked Meat, A Journey Through Texas Barbecue. It's 370 pages.
Is it the guy that then got made the barbecue editor of like the Chicago Tribune or the Texas Tribune or something?
I don't know.
Because he wrote or was part of an article very recently, like maybe a day in the life or a week in the life of this guy. And
Texas Monthly,
maybe, yeah.
Daniel Vaughan.
That sounds right. Is that
Daniel
the guy?
Daniel Vaughan is the magazine's barbecue editor.
Right. Is he the guy that wrote the book?
Yeah. Yes. Then in March 2003, Hobbiton officially he became the country's one and only barbecue editor.
Right. Yeah, I've heard of him.
There you go. It's a fascinating book.
He can't eat very much in each place he goes to because he goes to several places a day.
Yeah. And one of them is like, he visits like six or seven places in a day. But he's not a small guy. He's at Barbecue Snob on Twitter.
There is...
God, I want barbecued meat now.
Yeah, me too.
Melanie made a pulled pork for dinner. Very good.
I had beautiful pork chops last night. Oh, God, I love pork.
See, pork is my least favorite meat.
Really?
I think so.
Why is that?
I can appreciate a good crackling and I like, you know, barbecue pork, but I just like every other meat more. Maybe not chicken.
Pork belly?
Sometimes chicken. Pork belly. Yeah, there's some great pork. There's some great pork preparations.
But you like bacon.
I like bacon.
Bacon is sliced pork belly.
Bacon is pork. Okay, but like a pork chop is, I would never choose a pork chop over like almost anything else. And I would almost never choose roast pork over another roast meat.
Yeah.
Unless it, you know, came with amazing looking crackling or something.
I think that you are out of your mind and also you're crazy and I'm baffled.
Okay.
None of that's true. Is it because of the fattiness? Because it does have...
No, there's a flavour in... I mean, it's not in bacon, obviously, but there's a flavour in pork that I don't like as much as other meats.
An after effect, an ongoing taste aversion from that time you were stranded on the desert island and you turned out to be the only survivor and everyone else obviously couldn't be found and you turned out much fatter than when you went in?
No, that's not the reason. No.
That's not the reason? God damn, pork is so good though.
Yeah, no, I've had some great pork, but it's just generally not my favourite at all.
So your favourite is beef, right?
Mm.
You like a big steak.
I love a good steak, but I also really like lamb.
I like a lamb chop, man.
I think my favourite roast meat might be lamb.
Lamb chop. Oh, okay. All right. No, my favourite roast meat. I like cheap roast beef. Like what are the sort of places? What are they called? The places where you go up and you give them your plate and they put stuff on it. What are those places called?
Oh, like buffet.
Yeah, buffet. I like buffet style cheap roast beef with like that shitty gravy and dodgy potatoes. I really like that. Sometimes I crave that.
One of the best roast beefs I've ever had was actually at a buffet, and it was in Vegas somewhere. And the best thing was it was carvery.
Yeah.
So I was like, can you cut me a thick slice? And he did, and it was thick.
Yeah.
And it was like a steak. It was amazing. It was really good. Very tender.
I look, I'm not saying I'm not a fan.
No, but I know I am what you mean. You get that sort of, you know, the grey roast beef from Valentine's.
Yeah, and I have, I'm not kidding, I'm not messing around when I say I have craved that kind of grey roast beef before.
Oh yeah, no, it has a certain appeal.
Lamb chops were a big part of the early success of my weight loss.
Right.
Because I tell you what, you know, you have four lamb chops in a pile on a plate. You don't eat a hell of a lot of other stuff with that, and you feel very, very happy indeed.
And they can be pretty lean.
No, it's not. No.
You just think about not, you're just into portion control.
I think ultimately that's right, and I don't think that lamb is especially lean.
No, but it can. And be. I wouldn't it's chop quite off. It's easy meat to trim.
But why would you do that?
I don't know, people.
Listen, idiots trim.
Hey, lots of people trim.
Idiots. The flavor is in the fat.
So lamb, is my most. I think it's my number one roast.
Yeah.
Well, a good roast chicken, like a really good roast chicken. Pretty hard to beat sometimes.
Good chicken gravy is hard to beat, that's for sure.
Yeah. Beef, I mean, like a beef Wellington or something is pretty great.
Yeah.
On like a, you know, fried or grilled, probably steak number one.
Yeah.
Then probably lamb.
Yeah.
But then your specialist porks, like your pork belly or your barbecue pork, those I'm into. But straight roast pork or just your average, you know, your standard roast chop, pork chop, not really into that.
No, you're wrong.
I think you're wrong.
No.
You're wrong that I'm wrong.
A baked chop? Oh!
No, sorry, I don't mean a baked chop. I mean, you know.
No. I'm saying a baked chop is a good thing. That's how That's how I made them last night. Baked on a trivet of yams. Oh.
Is it a trivet when you make it out of yams?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so good. So good. I think baking is the best way to make it, almost all of those things. Best way to do sausages.
Yeah, sausages can be great that way.
They get that real snappy skin.
I love a good pork. I love a good pork sausage. Obviously.
I can't believe that we used to poke sausages. Like just routinely. Like it was just it was de rigueur, right? You would poke your sausages. You'd stab them.
Were they not as good though? Were they? Because they, if you didn't poke them, they did tend to explode a bit.
I feel like they're the same. But if you poke them, it lets all the fat out. And as I've already established, the fat is the flavour.
Definitely true in the case of sausages. No question.
All right. Hey, thank you, Dylan.
It's okay.
And listeners, thank you for listening to this amazing episode of Discourse. We, I think we had an overload of politics. And so we did have a couple of mentions there. We did do that. But mostly, I think we just avoided politics this week. And next week, who knows?
Next week, being a comedy and technology podcast.
We might talk about public transport.
Is this a thing? Do you know this? Have you planned something?
I've definitely not planned anything.
Didn't think so.
Maybe we could talk to an engineer about Alice, the tunnelling machine.
Did it break through? Wasn't that meant to happen?
Yeah. Oh, it was just amazing watching it happen too. Just perfect. Like it was 1 centimeter off.
Bloody idiots. God, can't get anything right.
Well, but 1 centimeter, when you look at that cutting face, there's absolutely amazing accuracy.
Or I don't understand how they do that.
Is it precision? Probably with lasers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
All right. Thank you, everybody. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Fish and chips.
This show is cancelled. Beep.
What a fucking ridiculous show.